Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Terry Rich. Terry is the CEO and president of Rich Keynote of about 25 years. He loves to engage and entertain audiences around the world. He is the entrepreneur's entrepreneur. That's what I define him as. He has many aspects we could talk about in this interview, but I want to talk about specifically one thing. I want to focus on the creative, imaginational innovation. I want to kind of focus in on that. But he's done so many things. We could have you back as a permanent guest and never have anybody else on the show. So, Terry, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you very much. And you'll find quickly that I'm always off the top of my head. We're always talking. I'll probably have 30 or 40 ideas as we get to that. So just know that's my personality. We'll be bouncing all over, but I'm ready to follow your lead.
Well, it's all right. Bouncing is a good thing. As long as they're focused on something that people can listen to and it can make a difference. My first question to you would be, what was the serendipity, the accident, the coincidence that happened in your life that you ended up where you are now? Now, I understand you've got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff you've had in your life. What was the first thing that pops into your mind as the most important thing or something that guided you going, I'm going to go this way and I better follow that because I'm trying to go against it. I better go down this road. How you ended up where you are now?
Well, it has to be college. I think when you become independent, you're looking for something to do. My direction initially was coming out of high school. We had a great jazz band leader. Ooh. And he played all over the world. He got mononucleosis, so he decided to settle down with his family. And our jazz band, when I was a senior in high school, was number one rated in the Midwest. And I really learned a lot of creativity because you're doing ad-libbing, right? Or you're doing a solo and you really get to express yourself. So I started to say, I want to go to college and be, you know, a math teacher or play professionally. In fact, 13 of the 21 people in this band play professionally today. But I got into college. I played first chair jazz band at Iowa State. But I was a math major too, because my parents said, you're not going to make any money if you're in music. So I was going to be a math teacher. But where it really changed is when I did my student teaching, realized that's not really what I was enjoying. So I went back and a friend of mine said, heck, you know what? You can go over here, talk and make a living. So I went to the TV and radio and lo and behold, it worked. And so I got started in cable television. And the reason that that changed from being a math professor to radio and television is I waited a little too long to become somebody in broadcast television. So all my buddies got jobs in, but they asked me to help in this little company called cable television called Heritage. And so I started in cable television. They were paying me not much money. Seemed like $1 million because I came off the farm. And lo and behold, they were paying me these things called stock options. So, you know, I worked for quite a few years in cable television. It all worked great. I'll tell you some of the failures I've had that really spurred me during that time. But a very entrepreneurial company. People, you were excited. If you made a mistake, they ask you to learn about that, reframe it, and put it together. And then ultimately, when I got there, the next big break was by trying that, I realized I love to do on-camera television, that I would love to do national television. I ended up being on the Johnny Carson show on just a crazy promotion that we put together. So just because, you know, I had a friend say, hey, you ought to try this, and I tried it, I realized that entrepreneurial spirit, which you get on the farm, quite honestly, because if you're driving a tractor and it breaks down, you can't just take it that a mile down and put it in the shop to fix it. You got to figure out, get in there and figure out something, even if you don't know how to fix it. So I think that entrepreneurial spirit, even on the farm, led me to where I'm at today.
All right, we're done. But yeah, that's a great story, because just to make aware, I'm going to talk to the audience for a minute, because it's like, he took a suggestion from somebody, go down this road, and said, okay, I'll try it. And the whole thing is universal mind, spirits, and angels in this philosophy, following the serendipity, accidents, and coincidences that go down that road. And when you're plugged into that subconscious imaginational mind and you see those things and you don't even have to know that, you just go down. Because if he didn't do that and he made a right instead of a left or went back on the highway, we wouldn't be talking here today. Now, that's not necessarily going to be a bad thing. It's just your direction of your life would have been different. And of course, you know, you wouldn't know. But there's all those little things. Those very serendipity, accidents, coincidences. There's very slight. Everybody goes, well, it's a coincidence that you called in and talked to you in 10 years. It's the little ones. It's the little things, not the big stuff that really takes down that road. And I love that story. So I want to ask you, I love this thing. You call yourself an idea dude. How did you become an idea dude?
I think in the, you know, I think it's kind of like your first love, your first job. You just learn so much. You just absorb it. So I got in this cable television business. We got to help start MTV, CNN. I got to meet Ted Turner, who was really, really entrepreneurial. And our company always encouraged, you know, trying new things. And when I was on camera, I looked up and I realized I didn't have a 5 o'clock shadow. So I decided to write to Schick, and I got on these things in the old days we called typewriters and wrote a letter, sent it off to Schick to say, you know, I love your razor, your track 2 razor. And if you'd like to have me come out to New York and be on TV, give me a call. I figured in 2 weeks I'd be on my way to New York to do this big. Well, during those 2 weeks waiting for that letter, I do what you might do if you play the Powerball or Mega Millions, in that you kind of think, what if I would win? So I kept thinking, what if I could get on national television? And that gave me an incentive. Well, 2 weeks later, I got it. To the day, I got this letter back and it said, "Dear Mr. Rich, we are glad you liked your razor. Unfortunately, you wrote the wrong company. Gillette makes that, and here's their address." Oh my God, wrote the wrong company. So I learned that, you know, my dad always said, you know, work hard for a company, and when you're 62, you get Social Security, you're going to be happy. I realized in all of this through the cable company, and then when we cashed it out at 40, I had all the money I wanted, all the things I wanted. Happiness happens on the way to success, and it doesn't happen when it happens. When you have a goal and you make that goal, what do you do next? So all of a sudden, I'm 40. I've got all the money I want. I've been on, at that time, the promotion with Johnny Carson occurred, and I got to be on that. So I'm learning that in that I had a failure, right? Now, think about that. Failure is the first step to success. That's what I learned through all this, because think about the three astronauts that went to the moon. You know what? If you, today, project managers, and we all have one idea we think is that million-dollar idea, so you do it, and then it doesn't work, and think, okay, I'm done. Well, think about that with NASA. If you were a project manager, you'd have set this up, so on this date, we're going to be this far from the moon, then we're going to land, and this day, you'd have said, 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1, blast off. We'll talk to you in 3 weeks, because we got it planned out. We know this is going to work. They were course-correcting over 90% of the time. They failed over 90% of the time. I failed with that razor blade, but because I had the desire, I learned from that desire what I wanted to do, I decided to help promote my local small town from Cooper, Iowa, and I wrote a letter we said, okay, we need somebody famous to just be a one day. We're going to have a centennial. We need somebody just for one day to be famous, because we never really had anybody famous from little Cooper, Iowa, town of 50. So we came up with the idea, let's adopt somebody. So I sat down and I typed in that old typewriter a letter saying, hey, we'd like to have you, and sent out a press release. I made the copies and I hit the wrong button, and I was going to make three. I made 44. I made 44 letters. So I wrote them up. I didn't have enough places to send. I had to go to the next town to find out the Miami Heralds. So I sent it all over the world, and I failed 43 of the 44 times. But the one letter that hit, the next day I get a call from someplace called UPI, and he said, hey, we like the idea. We're going to put it on the national wires. I failed 43 of the 44 times. I haven't sent them all out. If I didn't try a lot of ideas, I would have never succeeded. And lo and behold, he put it on the national wires, and I got the call from the Tonight Show, said, hey, we want to be first. If you would, we'd love to have you on. They brought us out. We were in front of 20 million people, and my number was 350,000, but the Register, the local paper, reported 12,500 people showed up for that little centennial in a town of 50. So that got me excited about, you know, I've had a lot of friends who have that entrepreneurial spirit, but they try one little thing. So you need a lot of ideas. And so that folded into learning. I wrote the book called Dare to Dream, Dare to Act. The concept is you divide out when you're ready to do something, to go in two stages. First step is daring to dream, creating new ideas. And you've done this with brainstorming, right? So you brainstorm. But instead of brainstorming and talking about those ideas, if you got the accountant or the lawyer in the room as you're doing those ideas, you're going to hear, that's going to cost too much, or you're going to get sued, or we tried that before. I call them nomads, you know, that they won't help you at all. You say, all ideas are good ideas. We're writing them all down. I want 100 ideas right now. So hit that, the idea, dude. You're trying to get in a bushel basket, 100 different ideas. And you want to make sure everybody contributing have different views than you. If they all look like you, you're not going to get the idea, because today's society, we have global intentions. Our people, we have a global market. You can make so much more money. You get everybody's ideas in there. You put them in there. Don't make any, no judgment, no judgment while you're doing this. You write them all down. You put them aside. And then at some future time, it can be 15 minutes. It can be 30. You bring everybody in and say, okay, lawyers, this is your shot, accountants. But you get your team together and we prioritize. You dare to act. We dare to dream. Now you dare to act. And you put the ideas in and you prioritize to the top two or three. And all of a sudden, one, you get some really good ideas. Two, you've already vetted it. So your team is going to be supportive because they were part of the decision. Mm. So that dare to dream, dare to act, two-step process of getting ideas is great. Here's the problem. COVID hits. So you realize you can't just get everybody together face-to-face anymore. And I learned when I was at the, when I went to lottery, now I'm a government employee. Oh my gosh, I'm a government employee. Really great employees that work for the government. But in that, I came in blazing because I love giving a lot of ideas, just like I'm doing now. And I stepped in, I said, okay, let's paint the wall green and put purple polka dots over here. Let's put animals on, because I worked for the zoo prior to this, that time. Let's put animals on the tickets, all that sort of thing. And I could just see the senior management staff melting down. They're saying, what's up? You know, and they're saying, we can't handle all your ideas. It's kind of like, I liken it that the King of England would say, oh, poop, and all the disciples head for the bathroom, you know? It's you don't realize how much employees really want to please and help you in making your goals, and you're trying for them. I said, well, I didn't want to have you do all this. I just wanted to give you the idea. So we really had a great talk to say, what could we do so that you could give an idea or I could give an idea to you that you would know that it doesn't really matter. It's not something that needs to be done today. It's not job challenging here. Just it's an idea. We came up with three things. Number one, when you do an email, you can put action required. Now, as a boss, if I put action required on it, that means you better do it because that could be your job. Maybe 1% of the emails I sent. The second one is FYI, or your information. And that's maybe 30, 40%, which are ideas that you should probably know about. So when we get together, we can discuss them and see what's going on. But the last one is the one I love using, and that's called COT, C-O-T. Now, we had to come up with rules because rules are very important. If you want to try this in your business or in your job or in your organization, the rules are, number one, you can read it, but if you're busy, if you're in the middle of a conversion project, whatever, just throw it away. You don't have to read it. All I'm trying to do is get the idea off my chest. You all of a sudden feel the priority. That's not a high priority. The second is, if you know, no judgment, don't tell me good job, don't send me anything back. Hey, I don't like it because of this. I'm just trying to give you an idea. And the final is pass it along so everybody else, you know, does the same thing. Well, here's what happens. In an office in the front, there's usually a receptionist. She or he sits there and they really are the pulse of the operation because they have the customers coming in. They'll look over and see that chair that's about to break. It stinks. It's been around forever. They'd like to do something with that. In the old days, what you do is you write it down on a piece of paper and you put it in the suggestion box.
Oh, yeah.
What then happens? Somebody comes in at some point and they send it around and then the account, I don't know. But you don't want to make that employee mad so you don't get back to them right away. And where are they? They're down in the break room saying, you know, they ask me for ideas. They don't, management doesn't care what I think. And so now they have a vehicle that they can send an email to anybody. Hey, here's a COT. Just put that in the subject line first, consider it or toss, and consider a throwaway. And they're able just to send them. And now you get this free flowing. And that's what really created more innovative ideas to be able to be thrown around. And then you put all the ideas in the pot and you go back to getting the management group together. Everybody votes on what they think the priorities are, and you'll find very quickly what people think are great ideas. So that's kind of how I came up with the idea, dude. And I love giving ideas, as you can tell. So I love when somebody says, can you give me a few ideas on something? And that's exactly how I start.
What I love about what you just said is you put such interesting pictures in my mind. You know, one of the things about communication, we talked before the record button. I said I used to be in the medical field with x-ray tubes, and I would have to just talk to people before I left either the country or the United States or wherever I was going, any town. And I talked to them for a while and I had to put ideas into their minds because we had to talk freely. When I went in, usually the engineer was being screamed at by the CEO. The radiologists are furious. They're losing millions of dollars. And this guy's going around a live dog chasing a tail. And it's usually not because the person doesn't understand what the answer is, but they're just there's too many outside stimulus going on. So I'd go in there, I go, Terry, nice to meet you. I'm Phil Bogolub. Let's go down and have a cup of coffee. In the cafeteria? No, no, no. Let's go down the road to a restaurant. Go to your house. I don't care.
Right.
And they were shocked. And within probably a day or less, it was fixed. And guess what I did? Nothing. I just sat there and was kind of the collaborator in understanding that I need to pull that information out of you. You've just been chasing your tail because people are going, is it fixed yet? Is it fixed yet? Is it? It's kind of like when your kids are little going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And you're trying to make everybody happy and everybody's yelling at you. Some people are going, oh, you'll get to it. The next person comes and goes, you know, and all this other stuff. So the whole idea that I learned in that is that the ideas that you were talking about, you have to be free and open to be able to share those. There's a lot of CEOs, a lot of managers, a lot of people that say, well, I'm in charge. I'm not listening to you. But how about if Terry's in my group and you have the next idea for the next coolest thing on the face of the planet that's going to change everything? And if you just simply have the free understanding going, there's a bubble of positivity, a bubble of energy around here, and just share what you have to share. Drop all those preconceived notions. Just because I'm the CEO or the manager, let's sit in here. One of the things I had to establish, and I'm sure I'm not the first, I did a stand-up meeting. A stand-up meeting is we stood there, you got it done, it's 5 minutes or less. Nobody sat down, perfect. Nobody was putzing around on their computers or whatever they were doing. And everybody go, why are we doing this? I don't want to stand for 5 minutes. I go, that's why we're doing it.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Get your ideas. One of the things I love also is you said failure, or we call them mistakes. But it was design in the world that we have to make these things. I wish there was another word for failure, mistake, because it's not bad. You have to send 43 letters out to get the 44th thing. The guy that did the chicken soup for the soul. The guy, you can go on and on and on and on and on. I don't want an instantaneous success. There is no such thing as instantaneous success. Maybe
that's
somebody has it once in a while.
Yeah, luck will prevail. But if you've got a lot of ideas and you're trying, I tell people starting a new company, you know, if you just have one idea and that fails, you're done. But if you have five or six ideas and you're working on five or six things at once, if one doesn't work, you've got a backup. And too many people spend too many years to get that one idea developed without a backup here and a backup there. In fact, when you start making money, people who are brand new that say, I want to start a new business, I tell them, go to work for someone else because you're going to learn things about legal and insurance and overhead and things you probably don't understand if you're starting it. But once you start and you want to start your company, start it at night and the weekends, and then you'll be making enough money that you can stand on your own. Then you're ready to go out on your own, but don't spend all your capital. And once you do make it and you hit that $1 million idea or $100,000 idea, take a portion of that. And what successful companies in America do are always thinking about what's the next idea, what's the change you need to do. I like to take 10% anytime I make some money, put it in a pot, and that's my play money. Now, most people say my play money is the gambling, booze, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. The play money for me is looking around and seeing, hey, he's got a great guitar. What could I do to make that better? What could I do? And I take something and do some crazy ideas. That's where I spend the money. But if I lose it, just like in gambling, it's done. I still have my 90% of the money. Too many people take their entire life savings, have one idea, they go after it, get frustrated, quit, and it's done. And then they say, I can't do this. And that just isn't the way it works. So take your time, take the step, and make it work.
And another thing is, I'd love to have your point of view on this. If you're questioning it too much, don't do it. If you're just going, I'm not sure, well, that's it, you're done. Because when I was in my 20s, not that I made horrible mistakes, but I didn't know. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that. Bad idea. No, I'll do this. Bad idea. It wasn't ruining my life. It just was a hard sell to figure out because after like...
Well, I would take it to the step that you just mentioned. Remember I said you have so much money and if you get to this point, you quit?
Yeah.
Too many people, and this is typical in gambling. I see this if you go to a casino, they take $100 in, they lay it down and they lose it at blackjack. I got to win it back and they reach in their pocket and pull out another $100. That's where you get in trouble. So your point is you started it, it wasn't working and it felt bad. You know, have a point where you say, okay, it's done. I'm moving on the other because I've got two or three others I'm thinking in my mind to develop. And then you'll always be moving forward. The other thing is if people are watching you and it's brand new, I get a call every once in a while say, hey, what would you suggest to someone that's young? I would suggest that you, when you go into a company, first thing you do, if the boss says, hey, the toilets are plugged up, the janitor's sick, anybody want to help? I'll be the first one because you'll get noticed. Number two, and this is one that I failed at and still fail at, is learn how to relax, whether it's reading a book, whether it's meditating. I haven't figured that out. I'm always looking for the next deal and all that, and I haven't figured out how just to say I'm at peace with myself, which I think you've done a really good job at. So I think those are important. And the final thing is, new ideas aren't just income. I'll give you an example. I went to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I gave a speech out there, and I went in the bathroom, and there was a box there, and you had a hole in the middle of the box you could see through, and it said, waste reducing exfoliator.
What?
What the heck is this? And I opened it up, and I said, those darn accountants, creative company. They realized in a hotel, you give somebody a nice hotel, so you get a big bar of soap on the sink and a big bar of soap in the tub.
Right.
They realized that when you're in the tub, you're washing your hands or whatever, you're only going to use about that much of the outside.
Right. And you throw it out.
Let's put a hole in the middle. Let's take that piece. We put that on the sink with the big one in the tub. We just save 50% on our operating costs. Now that's creative.
Yeah.
We also had the same idea at the zoo. The zoo was losing, when they asked me to run the zoo for a few years, the zoo was losing $600,000 every 6 months. So I started thinking, well, they said, well, you know, you're going to have trouble because we got to raise $2 million. And of course, the zoo's in disarray, so people didn't want to invest in it. I said, we don't have that kind of money. So we said, what do we have around the zoo that is free? Animal poop. All right, let's do an exhibit, scoop on poop, and we show little kids what elephant poop looks like and giraffe poop looks like. So we had all these displays, and we had all these kids coming in laughing and screaming. And then they go home and tell all their buddies at school.
And they go.
Immediately started selling. We also sold buckets of tiger poop because in our state, we have these things called white-tailed deer, and they're eating all the flowers and everything. And we realized tigers are predators and deer are prey. They've never met each other in North America, but if we put that tiger poop near flowers and bushes, deer would never get close. And so we made, I think, $25,000 just on selling tiger poop that summer.
There's a joke there somewhere. Shit and shine. I know there is. There's a whole thing. But that's true. It's very innovative and very. When I was at the X-ray tube company, I was told to make this thing, this X-ray tube that was not normal. And this is my one big project. I'm like, okay, great. I got in the first meeting. It was a stand-up meeting there, so we can't do it. And I said, why?
Well, that's done a challenge right there. You hear that, man? That's the time to raise hell.
I'm just like, okay, now you're challenged. This will be an interesting engineering project here.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Like, you know, I was given $1 million. I told what to do. I did nothing more than anybody else, but I'm like, okay, this is what I got to do. And I was familiar enough with the factory that I'm like, okay, why can't we do it? And he basically told me that we've never done it before. We can't do it because we've never done it before. I go, well, that's nice because it's getting done. Yeah. I don't remember how I said it. And I knew these people and I always used you got to use humor. You got to get people past that, you know, that the whole thing.
You got to let them know you care. Absolutely.
But every meeting, we can't do this. We did this, but now you want us to do that. We can't do this. So you tell me, you walk me out on the floor and I'll go through it and we'll figure it out. Well, I came in about 4 months under what the project was supposed to do. I came in about $400,000 under budget, and it was the fastest project that was ever done in the factory. And you know, they gave me some bonus or something like that. I didn't do it for that reason. I was doing it for myself because I'm like, I got some unusual thing. And I found out later, it's like the reason why they gave it to me, because I was more of a technical support engineer out in the field more than just designing. They said, the reason why we wanted you to do it is because we knew you'd get it done with who you are. I go, what does that mean? He goes, because you communicate to people that everybody else in the factory don't want to communicate to. You're dealing in situations that we're not familiar with. You come back and tell us what to do. But you were in there when people were screaming at you or screaming at the, they didn't know me, but the engineer's getting beaten down or something's going wrong or something blew up or imploded or something caught on fire, or whatever it was. I was the one to put the fire out. I was called, one of my managers called me to fill in a box and went, you just ship Phil, he goes to the box. So it's like, we were just seeing what you could do. You want to do another project? I go, no, I don't want to do another one. Because
succeed with one, you've got to do another. You had the no man there. I call them the nomads because they're the ones that say, no man, this will never work, you know, when you're there. So that's a really, really important to, when you get those, is try to avoid them in the idea process. Now, you need those folks to tell you when you get into the execution, because if they know that you do X, it's going to break you. You want that expertise, but you sure don't want it in the idea because you're trying to dream. In fact, I've got one that will be perfect for you. I got a $1 million idea and we get done with this conversation that I will give you and your audience and we'll figure out how to make it work.
Okay, that sounds good. I got to tell you another story because these things keep popping on my mind. So when I first got there, they came out with this tube and the X-ray tube went on a CT scanner. So it's spinning RPMs and all this other stuff, pressure and time and everything. So I said, Phil, go out and test it. I go, where's the scanner? We don't need a scanner. It's like, what do you mean you don't need a scanner? It's like, well, it works on the bench. I go, you know, this goes in centrifugal force and all this other stuff. It's like, well, yeah, but we did it with this other thing because they manufactured ones for a manufacturer, but they had scanners there. Well, we know enough. We don't need to put it on there. It'll be fine. I go, it's going to fail. It's like, that's very negative. I said, it's going to fail. That's why you hired me. So the whole thing got done, record time. They got the whole project done. I went out within an hour and failed. I called them up. I got up on a speakerphone with the engineering manager. Everybody go, it failed. And it was total silence on the other end. I said, nobody, because nobody wanted to say, I wasn't there to say, see, I told you so. I said, we need to approach this in a way that's in realism, not in trying to save money, not in trying to understand that this is the way we've always done it. So I learned very early on, not that these people were bad. They were stuck in this tunnel of going, this is the way we do it. We're going to do it the same way. This is the way we're going to do it. They're going to do it the same way. And I always tried, unbeknownst to me, I was challenging them because I always challenged myself. So we got back. It took another 6 months to correct it. But when I went out there, we did alpha testing, beta testing, something failed. I knew what was going on. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to still fail, but it's not going to fail within the first hour.
Hey, I got a little secret for you. Next time this happens, this is a great little
exercise. I'm out of this business now, but that's okay.
Yeah. This is a great little exercise to demonstrate because we all believe we know something, right? Okay, real quick, you tell me, what color is a stop sign?
Red.
What color is a yield sign?
Yellow.
Nope, red and white and has been since 1971. But if you ask that question to 90% of the people in America, they will always say yellow. And that is just amazing.
Wait, a yield sign is not yellow?
It's red and white. Look it up. When we get
to here, I believe you.
Yeah. Since 1971.
Were you born in 71?
Were you born in 70? You know, the number of people that do that, it's been that way forever. They'll tell you, most of them will tell you yellow. That's a no passing zone is yellow.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so the point of the matter is that people, that's why when you brainstorm, all ideas are good ideas because you got people who believe they know what's right. And most people, just like I could see in your face, would swear that a yield sign was a yellow.
Yellow.
It's red and white.
See, now I'm going to have to look for this. I'll tell you another little tidbit. I know the audience has probably heard this story before, but my buddies and I, when we were in college, engineering school, we got bored in the last trimester, and we made up this word called forbesthetics. So I met my buddy for a beer one time, went back to the office. The next couple of days later, we were in this big meeting in the engineering group. So I did it. I did it with total conviction. Total conviction. I said, you know what? How does this apply forbesthetically? Now, in my mind, I'm thinking there's not one person that's going to admit that word. Go, what the heck is he talking about? To the day I left the company, not one person said they didn't know what it was. The engineering manager looked up and goes, that's interesting question, Philip. We'll have to take that offline. And I was like this, trying not to smile, going, it doesn't mean anything. Can't you say you don't
that's
know?
Great. That's great.
That's one of the first things my dad taught me when I was a kid. We'll sit in the front of a class, ask the question. And when you raise your hand, trust me, everybody behind you is going to ask the same question. They're just scared to do it. So when I did that, I have this vividly in my mind. I don't know what grade I was in, but I raised my hand. I look behind me. Everybody's raising their hand because they didn't understand it either. So I learned very early on, if I made a mistake, admit you made a mistake. Learn from the mistake. Grow from the mistake. And a mistake, like I said, I love to have a different word than failure or mistake because that's the only way. And be able to go in. And you don't want to mortgage your home. You don't mortgage. You know this as well as I. What's the biggest number one failure of any business that goes on? They run out of money. Don't do that. When I started the business here, I've only been doing this on my own for about 7 or 8 years. I did, for about 3 years, I did engineering contract work because people wanted to hire me, but I could, because of technology, I was doing it from home. And then they paid for my trip if I supported stuff. So sure, I built up a nice nest egg to buy my computer, buy new equipment, buy blah, 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 blah.
And write them off.
I'm sorry?
And be able to write them off.
Exactly. Exactly. And the whole idea is to be able to go into this with a plan. When I left the job, I didn't want to. Who wanted to? I thought I'd just live there and retire there. Yeah. Stuff happens. I believe it was meant to be to what I'm doing and why I'm doing this now. This is part of the whole business. But you also made an excellent point. Don't depend on one idea. Is it Napoleon Hill? No, Earl Nightingale. And some people who haven't heard him, go look him up. He's been gone for a long time. He said, get up in the morning and he writes 10 things down. Nobody's up. You just write 10 or 20 things down. Do it 5-7 days a week. Most of the ideas are terrible. You just need one. And then keep going, because you're right. If you have just one concept and something changes in the economy or blah, 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 it goes down, you got nothing.
Yeah.
So you got to have one solid piece. For me, it's the Agenoi philosophy, and everything goes out on there like in tentacles.
Let me add a step two for that one that you just talked about. Damon John, who's on Shark Tank, black guy on Shark Tank.
Right.
I did an event with him a few weeks ago, and he was writing things down, same way you're talking. I'm thinking, wow, you get that many million-dollar ideas going all at once? He said, well, I do 5 at night, 5 in the morning, but they're not ideas. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, you know, I've had all the ideas to make money that I want. He said, I'm learning how to write 5 things down that I'm going to do for myself that day. Because when I wake up in the morning, I may want to have Raisin Bran, which I haven't had for 2 weeks, or I may want to, you know, go to lunch with my wife. I'm going to do something that makes me happy, because if I'm happy, I'm going to have an idea that's going to make others happy, and it puts me in the frame of mind. Now, I do the same thing when I go on TV. I'm doing a big TV project. I'm hosting something. I wear certain things, whether it's underwear or socks, or there's certain things that I always have. Watch is a big one. And because when I walk on, I've had success with the past, I'm going to have success now. And it just helps you in a frame of mind when you wake up that day. If you have something that is your favorite, and I guess it's superstition, but it really puts you in the frame of mind. That's what he's doing. But, you know, he's happy because he's learned success, but now he's learning success within himself rather than just for other people, which is what most of us have to do when we're in a job.
It's not, it's more of a support mechanism. In the philosophy of Agenoi, I use the sand timer as a representation of conscious, subconscious, fulcruming, which is just balancing in the middle, the now, the future, the whole thing. And when I do my seminars now, I'm always talking about this, and I reframe it and I redo it. It's not so much that it's superstition, it's what works for you. When I get up in the morning, I always, before I open my eyes, I grab my wrist, I go, think I'm alive. Of course, I don't know what it would feel like if I'm dead, so let's assume that I'm alive. So I go, okay. And open my eyes and I go, okay, thank you, God, for that. Thank you, God, for the light. This is what I do. I do this every single morning because it reframes. I love that word, reframing, because you're reframing and you have to constantly do it over and over again. It's the university of the mind. We go to school, maybe through college or get a diploma. We go through life and our job, but we're told what to do the whole time. But then when it comes to retirement, or you're getting to the point of going, I really wanted to go down this road, you didn't listen to yourself. You didn't listen to something. And right. It's not like you said earlier, don't take some illogical chance. Don't be mortgaging your pension plan, your home, your family. Think about it. But if there's something, you want to play piano, you want to be an artist, you want to be the mayor, you want to be anything that you thought you wanted to be, you can do it. But put some logic, common sense. And also you said, if you don't know how to, go in that job and figure it out. Go work for somebody. Go work for Terry because he works blah, 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 and you want to do blah, blah, blah. You want to do X and Y. So when you go down the road, you know what to expect. You're not going to know everything. I knew what to expect somewhat with doing my business because I met hundreds and hundreds of owners of medical companies all over the world, from all the way up to all the way down and the middle people. And everybody going, you know, if you ever do this, Philip, remember that. I'm like, didn't think about that.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody said, you know, you got this name, Agenoi, and you're doing this musical, blah, blah, trademark it. Oh, really? He goes, and don't go on the internet, call a lawyer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes it
having a good lawyer, having a good accountant when you're starting a company or trying to do something new is really, really important to protect yourself.
Because you don't know what you don't know. So you have to figure that out. And a lot of time, please don't. I'm just suggesting to people, don't go on the internet.
Yeah.
Go call somebody. You might have to go through 3 lawyers or 3 accountants, maybe get the right person. Maybe you talk to a friend, maybe you're friends with Terry and go, hey, what do you suggest? Because you trust that person. Get somebody, because you can find somebody you can trust and get that done.
Great entrepreneurs have that support mechanism behind them. And when you begin, you have them as advisory boards. And if you start making money and building it up, then you start paying them or start giving them stock. But having good people around you to supplement what you don't know. I am an awful reader. I don't like to read long, boring, you know, not depositions, but whatever.
Yeah.
Books. I just would kill me to read Gone with the Wind, because that's for somebody else. In fact, Henry Ford once said, I can pay a nickel to a kid to go get anything, any answer at the library. Now, today, it's I can pay a nickel to any kid to go to Google. My job is thinking up new ideas. That was his philosophy. And I think that's my philosophy as I do that. But you need the combination of all these together, because you need a good lawyer and a good accountant. Let them, they enjoy that. That's their trade to learn from.
Yeah. And Henry Ford, you know, it's funny because I read a whole lot of, I'm the same way. I read, if it's a philosophical book, I read 3 pages, stop and think about it. If I'm reading a good book like Think and Grow Rich or something, whatever, these tons of books that I have, I read it, I stop, I think about it. And when I talked about the research and readings I did about Henry Ford and his life, he didn't do it on his own. And no. And I think that's one of the things that people have this misnomer, that I got this great idea or great ideas, and I'm not going to have anybody do it because I'm not sharing in the profits. I'm sharing in the thing of it. But it's not really that. It's you can't get. When he was saying, you know, people's like, you're going to build an engine. You're going to put 200 of those horses, 200 horsepower, 100 horsepower, whatever it was, into it's never going to happen. It took like 2 years for his engineering team to do it. But he had people behind him. He had his wife, his family, some very close friends. His neighbor said, you're crazy. Nobody's going to, just never going to be successful. But he knew this, because you can't do this on your own. You need a good mentors or mind mentors, as I call it, a good support system, whether it's your wife, your friends, your family, to keep going. You know, when the outside world's saying no, they come in and going, you're fine. Keep going. Oh, by the way, maybe you do this, it'll help you out. Because I don't want somebody going, Phil, you're the best. You're a genius.
Yeah, and then you don't want that either, because that can give you that can be bad advice. And you got to add faith in that, right? I mean, you got to have someone who you believe will support you in the faith that you have within yourself and with your family and what you're trying to do. Are you ready for the $1 million idea?
Do it.
All right, here it is. I love this because you're an engineer. You just might have the answer to this. This is why I'm telling other people.
Yellow.
I told a guy I told a guy one time that I had this deal in the old days with a can of Diet Coke when they made it where you didn't pull it off and went. So we made little things for people. We tried to patent it and put a thing on to open up pop cans. And I said, what if somebody steals this idea? And he said, you got one good idea, you got another. So here's my good idea for you. So we were helping promote a lottery, Mega Millions, Powerball. They said, come up with some ideas to promote Mega Millions. And so I'm driving home, and the last few nights I've seen these, you know how the moon, you can just see a fingernail on the end, on the side?
Yeah.
So it's dark over here, and then you see a little, what do they call that, an eclipse or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Long story short, oh my God, all we got to do is find a laser or a spotlight, and we'll put the Mega Millions jackpot amount on the moon, on the dark side of the moon. No one owns the moon. We could own the moon as a billboard. No one's claimed that yet. So I started calling around. I called my alma mater, some of the folks there, and I got hung up twice. I thought it was some kooky guy. So I called the competitor, University of Iowa, and I got an astrophysicist, and he said, well, here's your dilemma. If you have a laser or a spotlight, you go through the atmosphere, it's gonna dissipate because of the atmosphere.
It's gonna bend and everything, yeah.
So I've got the idea, I've got everything ready. So we need to find someone who knows Elon Musk. If we put that thing on a satellite, we own it. So there is the engineering concept you need to come up with. And now we got probably a $1 billion idea that everybody in the world, at some point, if we do it right, would look up and see the advertisement on the moon.
Well, just think about this. And it was only in one city, of course, and this is movies, but when the bat plane went up in the air, remember how it went into the moon?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That's what you're looking for. And you're looking for those concepts and idea. Terry, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. We could be talking for hours. Of course, I never got to even half my stuff, but you know what? It's been just very informative, very lighthearted. And just to make sure the conscious community understands this, is that this is why I love doing the show. This is the people that I love talking to. These are the relationships I love being with. These are the people I just have conversations with that I normally would never have. And I'm learning so much about myself and so much. One of the things I learned more than anything is that we're not so different. We kind of just, we feel a little better, feel a little worse. The stories change, but we feel a little better, feel a little worse. And we still go through the same stuff in our own way. But the whole idea is, if you're surrounded by self with faith, belief, family, friends, and you're mentioning about money. Money is important, but unless I understand, unless you know, wait, you can't take this with you. And it's what you do here and now. It's what you make a difference with here and now, with your family or your friends. And if I can make somebody's life, whether I'm doing the seminars, my philosophy, doing this show, doing my musical, whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm going after, and I could change somebody's life because they're never going to tell you all the time, I've done what I was supposed to do. So I want to thank you again for being on the show, but I'm going to ask you one more thing before we go, and then we'll close it out. I want you to leave a good aphorism. You've said some really great things already, but something you could think positively that you could leave the audience going, ooh, I like that.
I like the concept that after all is said and done, a lot is said and a little is done. So, you know, getting the ideas together, but daring to act. If you have the greatest ideas in the world, until you act, you don't make any money. So dare to dream, dare to act. That's kind of what's the one book that I have. The other was on fraud and internal fraud and protecting that. But I've got both those books on that. Those would be my, that would be probably the other concept that I've not really mentioned.
No, that's all right. I go check them out, because when I was doing some research on Terry, we could have gone down several different avenues. Like we talked about, not just one good idea, many ideas. He's done so many cool things in his life and very different, but that's what makes you well-rounded. That what makes you see things that you probably never would have been. And he went out there. And again, Terry, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for the invitation. It was fun.
Absolutely. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.